WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. It's been a busy week for President Bush and the Republicans. On the eve of the Republican National Convention, President Bush had to fend off charges about whether or not he'd had an extramarital affair with a former aide. And in an interview this week, he said he would stand by his granddaughter if she were pregnant and chose to have an abortion. This puts him at odds with the 92 Republican Party platform. And today, Bush made it official. James Baker would take over Bush's beleaguered presidential campaign. Baker will be White House chief of staff and senior presidential advisor, giving him broad political powers. Michael Duffy has been covering the Bush administration since the last campaign. He is a White House correspondent for Time magazine and co-author of a new book about the Bush presidency called Marching in Place. I asked Michael Duffy how he would characterize Bush's first term in office.
Well, it's clearly been a mixed record. He has been an extraordinary manager of extraordinary events overseas, both in safeguarding American interests during the end of the Cold War and in the beginning of a new period when instability seems to be the enemy he sees most frequently overseas. At home, and this is no mystery, he hasn't applied the same kind of energy, much less interest, in the problems which face the country. And it's that he's paying the price for now in the polls, and it's that which he's trying to address both this week and next week at the convention as he goes forward toward re-election.
Do you think he has just a greater understanding of foreign diplomacy than he does of domestic problems, or that's truly where his interests lie?
Both. When you listen to George Bush speak in a press conference or in a conversation, he almost becomes a different person when talking about foreign policy and domestic policy. He hems and haws and doesn't know how to finish his sentences and has a kind of call-waiting style of talking. When he talks about domestic policy, trying to explain that he understands all four or five sides of an issue and never really making clear what he thinks because he's not really sure. In foreign policy, he is clear, he is concise, he speaks in affirmative statements, he's directed, he's engaged. It's like dealing with two different people. And I think most Americans have seen that now. So it's not just a matter of interest, it's also a matter of just what he's good at.
You write that his policy or his approach to governance is to not make things worse. That's how he rules.
Right. We basically think George Bush is a very conservative man, even more conservative than Ronald Reagan in some ways. You know, a lot of people think Reagan was conservative because he was he was for a bigger defense and he was very much anti-communist, and certainly that qualified him. But Bush's conservatism is far more philosophical. He's almost a conservative in the Edmund Burke sense. He fears change. He doesn't like it. It brings on uncertainties. It brings on instability. And he works at all levels, both at home and abroad, to prevent things from changing very quickly. We call him the warrior for the status quo. I think basically he's an old-fashioned order conservative, the kind of person who thinks things are pretty much fine the way they are now, and if you start tinkering with the way things are, they'll likely get worse, not better.
Well, he now is joining the chorus of other political or presidential contenders saying that he is the agent of change. When he says that, what does he mean, and how do you think he's using those words?
Well, George Bush, I think, as an agent of change, is about as likely as me being a member of the Dream Team. if you remember in 1988, interestingly enough, he said then very much the same thing. He said, "We are the change." It's an expression he used over and over again. What he meant by that in 1988 was that he was, of course, more moderate politically than Ronald Reagan. He was for a child care bill. He was for a Clean Air Act and other measures that would help the environment. He tried to, of course, pose as a kinder, gentler incarnation of Reagan, and that's what he meant by "we are the change" then. And he, for the most part, followed through on those things. I don't think we should undercut that. But what's happened since is that having accomplished those things, he basically decided that was all he had to do in the first term in order to get reelected. And several things. We had a recession, and he had an attack on him from the right of the Republican Party in the primaries, and he realized that he couldn't stand pat and get reelected. So he had to kind of refashion himself in this political year as someone who had done battle throughout the first term with the Congress and not gotten his way. He says now he's for change, and the way to get it is to elect him and a Republican Congress.
Bush has been criticized for not having strong convictions. George Will was even quoted in saying that his malapropisms reflect his empty beliefs. You don't agree with that, though. You see him as a man of convictions.
Yeah, I do. I really think that's one place where he takes... It's just what his convictions about aren't what we have come to think of as political convictions. They tend to be far more personal, and it's one of the reasons he's been so popular. He believes in family. He believes in friends. He believes in public service. He believes in a kind of coet sense of the flag, and he has a great deal of belief in personal loyalty. These are really more like values than convictions in our political realm, and it's one of the reasons he's always run so hard on values, because he had them. You know, he's got them in spades, and he's got them in a way that he doesn't have clear convictions on abortion, on taxes, on economic policy, across the whole spectrum. It's been one misunderstood reason for his personal than political success, I think. So I don't really buy the notion that he doesn't have convictions. I just think it's important to understand what they are and how they help him.
But what you're saying is that he may have convictions, but he doesn't have coherent, consistent programs built around those convictions.
No, his don't forget, his political career hasn't been one that's based on legislative service or even as like Ronald Reagan, a firm belief that, you know, we need to just do two or three things, cut taxes and raise defense spending, and everything will come right. He's someone who has hitched his wagon to a different series of political mentors over the years, starting with Barry Goldwater, then Richard Nixon, then Gerald Ford, and then Ronald Reagan, and who had to fashion or refashion his views in order to fit those various mentors. So the lack of convictions has helped him. It hasn't hurt him. His whole political experience is one of refashioning himself, and that has been obviously successful for him.
You describe the many sides of President Bush, and you say on the one hand he doesn't like confrontation, but on the other hand he's known to be very competitive.
Yeah, he's an extremely competitive man, and it's one of the reasons why I think he may yet win this race. He rises to the fight, and he loves being the underdog. It comes to him naturally. He loves being behind. It brings out the best in him because, well, it's like playing tennis. When he's down, he never plays better than when he's down two sets to love. That's when he really is able to dig down deep inside himself and really perform. Until then, he kind of just coasts and takes it easily. So he's a very nice man. He's not at all quick to anger. He's been extremely controlled all week about these Jennifer Fitzgerald allegations. Extremely controlled. You can almost see the steam coming out of his ears, but he has not exploded. And that's both in interviews that have been on TV and have been just done with print reporters.
My guest today on Fresh Air is Michael Duffy, and he is Time Magazine's White House correspondent, and he and Dan Goodgame have co-authored a book about President Bush called Marching in Place, The Status Quo Presidency of George Bush. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest on Fresh Air today is Michael Duffy, and he's one of the Time Magazine White House correspondents. Let me pick up on something that you said earlier about Jennifer Fitzgerald, and these were allegations in the New York Post that President Bush had had an affair with Jennifer Fitzgerald. How do you take these allegations, and how do you think the press is reporting on it, and how seriously do you take this story?
I take the story seriously, politically, primarily from a political point of view, in watching him react to it and see how he handles it. I'm taking these questions in reverse order. The press has handled it, I think, very delicately. Most of the big papers haven't fronted the story but have stuck it inside somewhere and kept their distance. Obviously, this couldn't have come at a worse time for him. But what we really learned this week wasn't anything we didn't already. It wasn't already out there in the rumor mill.
And since you've been covering Bush, I assume this is a story that you've been aware of.
Yeah, and most everyone has tried to prove it one time or another, and no one has successfully done it yet, certainly by any reasonable standard of evidence. What happened this week is the New York Post gave considerable space to a story that's been a book that's been out for about a month, in which, in one footnote, a dead man is quoted as having, in an interview with the author's husband, as having said he once helped arrange a tryst between Bush mm-hmm. and Fitzgerald in Switzerland.
Well, as a journalist, how do you read that?
Well, now we have dead men talking.
Right.
You know, you have to apply rigorous standards of evidence to things to an event that usually is only witnessed by two people. I mean, this is a subject on which Barbara Bush is a hearsay witness. It's a very difficult thing to prove. Moreover, one of the points we make in the book is Jennifer Fitzgerald was essentially used to be Bush's deputy chief of staff as when he was vice president, and she was a very tough customer. She was his doorkeeper, and she made a lot of enemies, including Jim Baker, because she kept access to the vice president very, very tight. And she has a lot of people in this town who aren't her friends. And it's very difficult to slice when talking to them, to slice the piece of truth mm-hmm. from, you know, the resentment. And so it's an interesting story that just won't go away. My hunch is that all this episode has done is simply negate the issue for the Republicans. They can't use that issue against Clinton anymore. It's kind of they both now have a no first use policy.
What do you make of the Republican Party platform? I think it's really fair to say it is a rather conservative platform, maybe even more conservative than the platform of 4 years ago. Are these Bush's ideas? Is this what he really believes in when you look at the platform?
Well, I think the platform writing process is one that the Republicans are using this year to do something they normally don't have to do, which is energize their base. The Buchanan insurgency and the string of mistakes Bush has made politically this year have left the conservative wing of the Republican Party about had it. You know, they're quite capable of sitting on their hands this fall. And the one thing that Rich Bond and the Republican Party don't want to happen is for the conservatives to stay home. They need to keep them in the game. They need them to turn out this fall. You know, the battleground of the 92 race isn't among conservatives, it's among independents. But in the meantime, the Republicans really have to keep conservatives in the game. And that's primarily what's going on in Houston.
So you see this platform as really placating some of the very vocal conservatives that have felt very locked out of the Bush White House and have even called for a different president.
Right. I mean, also, it helps Bush in this case. In as much as he doesn't have a lot he wants to do in a second term, there's no harm in getting on board the conservative agenda now. At least he can say, this is what I'm for. Gives him something to be for. So it's something of a twofer for Bush.
And yet, if you look at the issue of abortion and you look at the platform, which basically says that abortion only in the case of saving a woman's life, and then you read the interview between Bush and a reporter about what would happen if his granddaughter got pregnant, and he said basically he would support her choice, how is it as a public, or even how as a journalist, how do you make sense of those two positions?
Well, it's a classic Bush position. He's trying to both appease conservatives with a platform and reach out to independents and particularly Republican women in the suburbs by talking about his, quote-unquote personal view. This is, you know, a classic case of Bush trying to have it both ways. And what's particularly clear about it is that he's doing it for now because he needs those votes more than ever. We were in the middle of 1990 or 1991. He wouldn't be needing to woo those women or those voters. He needs them, and he needs them now because they're going to make up their mind here in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And so this is it's no coincidence that this that he made those comments this week, and Mrs. Bush made very similar comments.
So he's saying, "Read my lips, don't read my platform."
Right.
But the assumption is that the public then will be more convinced by what he says.
I think the assumption is that everyone will hear what they want to hear. And I don't think it's a whole lot more sophisticated than that. I think the other thing to keep in mind about the abortion issue, particularly as we watch George Bush, is that it once again shows how he does differentiate himself from the rest of the country. You know, he says, you know, if this were my granddaughter or my daughter, I would put my arm around her. And that's what you do for friends and family. And if you really kind of dissect that, what Bush is saying is, you know, if you happen to be a friend or family member of the Bush family, then, you know, you can. It's abortion is a personal choice, and for everyone else, but if you aren't, it's not. And I know that sounds harsh, but in fact, that's essentially it, is that certain people are going to make responsible decisions, and no one else really can be trusted to make those responsible decisions. And I think that his comments about what he would do, though they are intended to have political effect, are an interesting window on the way he looks at the country.
So will James Baker save the Bush presidency?
Well, he won't save the Bush presidency. I think that's already been a failure. I think he will save perhaps the Bush campaign. I think Jim Baker does three or four things for George Bush, which he desperately needs right now. The first thing is that he will come up with an agenda so that Bush can show that he's doing something. Most of the polls, even inside the Bush White House, say that while most Americans don't really disagree with Bush's fundamental ideology, they don't really believe he can do anything anymore, that he can't execute stuff. We're going to see just a blizzard of initiatives over the next couple of weeks, not because Bush really wants to do any of them or intends to do them, but to prove that he would do them and that he can do them. The second thing Baker does is that he's perhaps the only person in the country who can look George Bush in the eye and say, "Shut up. You're veering from the record." Bush is a sloppy campaigner. He can't really stay on a script. His mind wanders, and he's given to saying all the things we know he can say without much warning.
Let me just stop you there. Why is Baker able to do that with Bush? Why is he the only person in the country?
He's not scared to use strong language with the most powerful man on earth, which is tricky to do. It's still intimidating to talk to the president of the United States. It's a trick. And even people who've worked with him for a long time have trouble breaking into candor. And you do have a tendency to say what he wants to hear. And so Baker doesn't have this problem. And he can say to George Bush, you know, "You're screwing up, George."
Hmm.
The third thing Baker does, and this is just as badly needed, is that he'll draw a tight loop around decisions. Right now, there are 30 to 40 people in Washington who can tell you at any moment what the campaign and the White House are up to right now. It's one of the reasons they've been getting so much bad press, is that a lot of people know and a lot of people aren't pleased with it. Baker, who comes over to the White House with his team of four or five top aides, will draw the loop almost that tight. You know, instead of 30 people knowing what's going on, it'll be four or five.
So he's really centralizing the power.
Extremely. And leaks will stop, and it'll be harder to make sense of what's going on. It'll be a much tighter ship.
Do you think it's too late?
No, I don't think it's too late. I think he can still win. I think another week or two would have been too late. But I think he still can win a close one. I don't think it'll be a positive campaign at all. I think he'll have to... it'll be very harsh, not just with respect to Clinton, but the fundamental message, which is that we'll be very pessimistic. And it'll come down to Bush saying, "Look, I'm not great, but he's worse."
Hmm.
And you can have me, and you know what I am. It's the devil you know versus the devil you don't know.
How do you think the campaign will be in the next couple of months? And I'm wondering even how you compare Dukakis against Clinton and how much those two Democrats are going to change the way Bush is going to campaign.
The Clinton campaign is far more disciplined than the Dukakis campaign was. Clinton has been extraordinary in that he isn't letting Bush get away with these attacks, and he's responding very quickly, sometimes within the hour.
Sometimes even in anticipation of.
Yeah, and he's even beat Bush to a couple of punches. So that's something Dukakis never did. So he's shown that he's tough and resilient in a way that Dukakis never did, which I think is an important ingredient for running for president. I think you do have to show the American people that you can take it.
But do you think that toughness will bring out something else in President Bush?
Well, I don't know. I think he's shown that he can if he wants to. I do think the most important thing for him to do is to explain what he wants to do with a second term. So much of what drove the first term was a desire to be reelected. That absent that imperative, it's hard for me to understand what would drive a second term.
You've spent about 4 years of talking with Bush and people that he worked with, and since character seems to be such an issue in this campaign now, are there character issues you think that more character issues which will come out about George Bush? Ones that might cast doubt on who he is?
No, it's interesting. In 1988, George Bush went to New Orleans as a kind of, a warmed-over clone of Ronald Reagan, and everyone wanted to know, who is this guy? What does he think? What's he like? We know what he stands for. He stands for continuity. But we want to know who he is. And so he gave this kinder, gentler speech in which he talked about going to football games and moving to Texas and going to barbecues and hearing the quiet voices. And it was a wow of a speech, and he jumped 8 or 9 points as a result of it. 4 years later, he goes to Houston with a very different challenge. People know who he is. I don't think the American public are very confused about what this guy's like. What they don't know is whether he stands for very much or believes in anything or can do anything. And that's his challenge now. I don't think character is now going to come back and bite George Bush. I think his standard is a lot higher. And it's harder to cobble together convictions and beliefs than it is character. I mean, everybody has some story to tell.
Right.
But coming up with a plan for a nation that I think wants a plan, it's a lot harder.
Michael Duffy, thank you for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Michael Duffy is a White House correspondent for Time magazine and co-author of a new book about the Bush presidency called Marching in Place. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and this is Fresh Air.